There's a close connection between the Passion story and olive trees, because Gethsemane was an olive grove. What I want to do is to think about some of the ways in which olives are associated in less obvious ways. Here a reading from Paul's letter to the Romans, which uses the image of the olive tree to talk about the people of God. Jeremiah says of Israel, "The Lord once called you a green olive tree, fair with goodly fruit." And he's not the only prophet to use that picture of Israel as the olive tree of God. But then Paul goes on to talk horticultural nonsense. He says the Gentiles are like a wild olive grafted into the olive tree of Israel. What happens in olive groves is exactly the opposite. You graft a good olive onto wild olive stock. But Paul's writing theology, not a gardener's handbook, and his point is clear enough. What was outside the fruiting stock has become part of it. It's good to note a warning which is inherent in what he says. In those early days of the church when Paul was writing and Jew and Gentile were becoming more antagonistic, it was easy for the Christians to think that God had rejected his ancient people, the Jews. But in essence he's saying that there would never have been Christianity without Judaism first. So he warns them not to be contemptuous of their Jewish neighbours. If the old branches could be lopped off to graft in the new, there's no reason why the new cannot be lopped off as well. Sadly, there were centuries of anti-Semitism by Christians. We're only just emerging from those bad times. Our attitudes to Jewish people are going to be coloured by how much we've taken a passage like this into consideration. And it also reminds us we cannot afford to lose our Jewish roots, like the Old Testament. It's like the story of the spider who built a fine web from the ceiling. When it was finished, he took a step back to admire it and noticed an untidy thread reaching up into the darkness. So he threw it, and the whole web collapsed on the floor. He'd severed the line which anchored it to the ceiling. When I arrived in my last parish there, we used to having an epistle and a gospel, but no Old Testament reading. I changed that as soon as possible. We lose these roots at our peril. Most olives grown in the Holy Land were made into olive oil. Quite apart from its culinary use, it had religious usages as well. Jesus is accused by the high priest of being the Messiah, the Christ, and those two words in Hebrew and Greek translate into English as the Anointed One. Anointing was part of the religious rituals of ancient Israel, and it was olive oil which was used. There were three lots of people who were anointed formally. The first were the kings, and we've already thought today about the fact that Jesus was crucified under the accusation of being king of the Jews. The second were the priests, and again we've touched on how Jesus' sacrifice was the fulfillment of the sacrifices that the high priest made on the Day of Atonement. We still use olive oil in religious ceremonies. On Maundy Thursday in most dioceses, clergy gather for the annual service of the blessing of the oils, at which the bishop sets apart oils for anointing people at baptism and confirmation. Priests and bishops are also anointed at their ordination. The third flask of oil he consecrates is related to the third group who were anointed in the ancient world, the sick. Think of the story again of the Good Samaritan. He binds up the injured man and bathes his wounds with olive oil. It was used for healing. Probably these days we just think of olive oil to soften earwax, but actually it's still apparently a possible therapy for, if I get this word, hypolipoproteinemia. Oh dear, I didn't manage it. Whatever it is, in more popular medicine, we know it may well be a factor in lowering cholesterol, the so-called Mediterranean diets and so on. People have written books claiming 30 or 40 therapeutic uses for an everyday liquid. In ancient times, it was basic to healthcare. One of the ways in which we talk about the cross is that it is a place of healing. It's the place of healing the rift between God and mankind brought about by sin. It's the place of personal healing when we claim the goodness of Christ instead of our own sinfulness. One of the songs of the suffering servant in Isaiah, which Christians have always associated with the death of Jesus, says, "By his wounds you have been healed." Perhaps you remember the words of the hymn, "Bread of Heaven on Thee We Feed," contains these lines, which remind us not only of the healing cross, but of the grafting that Paul talked about. "Lord, thy wounds our healing give, to thy cross we look and live. Jesus, may we ever be grafted, rooted, built in thee."